Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
11 o'clock hour. It's Cody and Gold here on 610. We're a half hour away from a Chiefs red half hour. Nothing but Chiefs. What has to happen for the Chiefs to have a successful draft? We look back at the history and the impact players that have come over the last 5 years or so. But we start with the Royals here a little bit. You heard from Serto, baseball this afternoon. And for the lineup as a whole, I feel like it's pretty solidified. We've gone through and our variation of the lineup wasn't all that different from each other. Seems pretty straightforward for the most part. But when you get to the bullpen, there's a little more question marks there. I think the closer spot is pretty safe for everybody to
pencil in.
Ian Kennedy at that. But we're going to try to look and see how this thing is going to shape up come opening day. And is there a chance that this bullpen can be better than it was in 2019 here in 2020? So if you're looking at closer, setup man, seventh inning, and whoever else maybe surprises us in 2020, you start the closer spot. We both, and I think all three of us would, and most fans would say, all right, Ian Kennedy.
Foolish if you're not answering Ian Kennedy, at least for the front part of the season.
To start the year, Ian Kennedy is going to be your closer. I mean, that seems pretty obvious when it comes to that. 30 out of 34 save opportunities. That was actually ninth most in all of Major League Baseball this past season. No reason at this point to switch from that. That was a role that he found and he excelled at it.
He did. He's the most logical candidate. He was a really good closer for them last year. He'll be on the trade block pretty significantly around the halfway mark, so he's probably not the closer the entire season.
Yeah, come August, let's talk.
But he's likely, you know, and he wants to keep playing baseball after this. And I don't think that Kansas City is going to work out a long-term deal to keep him in that spot moving forward just yet. I think he becomes a free agent arm and becomes attractive as a closer to multiple other teams throughout the league. He's one of the better ones again, so if he repeats his performance again from last season, yeah, he's the closer. He's the closer for the majority of the year, barring some unforeseen incident that displaces him. The other part, because like this is a weird bullpen full of guys. Like there are plenty of names that you saw last year. You saw Scott Barlow. You saw Hahn. You saw Hill. You saw Jorge Lopez in the bullpen. You saw Lovelady. You saw McCarthy. You saw Newberry. You saw Rosario. At some point during the season, almost every single person on this list, you saw at some point during the year, even if it was late in the year, like Gabe Spire or others, with the exception maybe being Steven Woods Jr. So we were trying to figure out roles, partially because I'm not sure where they're going to land. I do think he lands there. In the setup role, I feel like it's Barlow. He got sent down last year, which again, you know, you were in Houston probably paying attention to the minor changes between the Royals bullpen.
I was at the time not knowing that there were trash cans being banged in Houston.
Might not have been your key. Barlow had a really weird year where to start the season, he looked dominant, like a guy who had closer stuff I thought could be a closer before Ian Kennedy had even really fully taken over that job, Gold. And so I thought maybe it was going to be him in the setup role or the closer role going forward there for a decent stretch and then wasn't. And then he fell off. But then once the season kind of came back around, he had kind of changed back to where I thought he'd be before. And so I just feel like if you're choosing one right now, despite the fact he got sent down at a point last season, I still think he's the logical choice at the setup man.
What I wonder, and this could go for whoever you think the setup man is, whether it's Scott Barlow, maybe even someone like Tim Hill, if what we just discussed with Ian Kennedy happens, which is that He starts the season as the closer. We expect that. And as the year goes on, and ultimately if they do trade him, Scott Barlow, whoever that setup man, naturally, depending on their performance, would be the easy guy. Then all of a sudden that would be the closer on the back half of the season, the final month or two of the season. So
possibly, yeah.
There's a good chance that that's the case. So Scott Barlow, you could theoretically say, yeah, he might be the setup guy early in the season. By the end of the year, he could end up potentially as the closer. Tim Hill's an interesting guy as well. 35 games in the second half of the 2019 season. Wonder if he potentially could be someone that becomes the setup guy. I don't know if he's the setup guy right out of spring training, however.
Watching Hill enough does not... He is an option. The Royals have said they see him as closer stuff. They've admitted that openly before. But I just don't see it. Like, again, Barlow was bad in June and July. He was really good. April and May, bad June, July. And then August through the rest of the season posted a 1.95 ERA in 27 innings pitched. He only allowed 6 earned runs and had 30 strikeouts. So more than a strikeout per inning. Hill, his blips of dominance are short. And do you see lefties as setup guys very often, which is a whole other conversation you could have with a guy like Richard Lovelady, who people could see as the 7th inning guy, who people could see as the 8th inning guy. That's where it gets convoluted. To me, I think you're right. Kennedy's the closer. Barlow is the 8th inning. And then you really start to try to decide who the hell is high leverage in this group.
Yeah, and I wondered, I mean, so those I think are the two most obvious names. And then before we even get to the 7th inning guy, I do also wonder, depending on how spring goes, you know, there's some wild cards out there. I know we have, you know, the surprise arms, but you wonder if there's somebody that can emerge as a setup guy. I don't think in right out of the gate it would be someone. Let's say it's we know that Holland's out there. Is he going to make this team or not? You know, you have Trevor Rosenthal as well. They kind of on a low risk, high reward type of signing that the Royals love to do and have had success.
And he was pumping 98 the other day.
Yeah, in his first appearance for the Royals in spring training. So maybe that if there's a third name to throw in, I think Rosenthal would be potentially somebody out there. I just don't know if that would be the situation you go with right out of spring
Holland.
Training. Greg Holland, does he make the? Where are you at that right now on that? I'm leaning that he's going to make the big league club. It's so early. I get it. I'm not basing this, by the way, off of anything he's done in spring. I just, if that slider is still effective and still anywhere near what it was, even if the velocity is clearly not what it once was, you can't tell me that he can't be effective and help out this bullpen.
If you're making me take a guess, I say he makes the roster, but it's so weird because he's been nothing but high leverage his entire career until he started to fall off. And now they're taking a shot on the chance that he won't fall off. And so if he pitches well, he probably is going to get stuck in a 7th or 8th inning role. And the thing about using Barlow in strictly an inning-by-inning basis, which is how the Royals have done it here a lot lately, and we don't know how Matheny's going to use his bullpen versus others, Barlow has excelled in that fireman role. As in, it's the 5th, you need a big out, come on in, Barlow, so he's not an 8th inning guy. Like if you're saying, hey, 7th, 8th, 9th, most games, Barlow might fit in better as a we use him when we need him kind of role. If you're making me choose a surprise name, it's Stephen Woods Jr. He's throwing hard. He's pitched well in spring training, and he is a complete unknown. They took him in the Rule 5, which is why it's a name you're not familiar with. The highest level he had pitched at in the minors was advanced A-ball. So high A. No double A, no triple A. He dominated in advanced A. He was a great pitcher. He got most people out. He had a good strikeout rate. All the things you want to see out of a pitcher, especially at that level. I could see him being one of those guys they use early and talk themselves into. The only other guys you can even have the conversation for is Staumont and Lovelady, and those are two guys I want to actually... Talk about guys I want to see in high leverage 7th or 8th inning. Those are the guys I actually want to see because I don't think Lovelady ever got enough time to consistently get in a role to actually do it. I think he can be an 8th inning guy. I think he can be a 7th inning guy. I think Staumont can be a 7th inning guy, can be an 8th inning guy. I'd rather move those around, use Barlow in spot situations, and let Stephen Woods come to the rescue. Because Spire and Rosario or Hahn or Blewett or whoever else they're going to use in whatever role, I'd rather send them down to AAA and take the time. And that goes to Zimmer, too, who got the extra injury exemption, so he's definitively feels like the kind of guy they probably bump back so that they can use later.
You brought up Hahn, and he's, what, this is now 2 off seasons of rehab. He had the elbow issue a little while back as well.
He's not a count-on guy.
So that I don't see him having a significant role.
Well,
the other wild card, too, other than Rosenthal, is, and we had this discussion, as it would have been either late last week, about do we think this roster, what the guys that are in camp are the guys that are going to be in camp for the duration, meaning is there a veteran that they would go out and get? And
I still think it'd be a starter for something else.
We thought it would be maybe for that fifth starter spot potentially, but definitely a pitcher. Would they go out and go on the veteran route for a bullpen arm? Doesn't seem entirely likely that they would do that, especially since they've brought in a couple
Holland
of, and Rosenthal, two guys that they're hoping that.
And took Woods in the Rule 5.
Right.
Like it seems so like they've gone through that.
Exactly. So I think you're going to see Holland make this team as well. And if he does, I think he'll have a role. I'm not saying he's going to end up being a key guy necessarily in the bullpen, but he's going to have a role on this team early on in the season. And I think at this point you would have to lean that way.
And maybe the roles are different. The Royals need to be more inventive than they have been in times past. The Mets are opening up this season supposedly with a 6-starter plan. As in, they have a lefty and a righty, both as a fifth starter, and they're just going to use those guys.
Based on the matchup, right?
Based on the matchup. You know when they're going to use them the other times? In relief. In long relief. In different circumstances, they can still get them in the plan. I think the Royals need to finally try to do something inventive with the staff if they're not going to bring up young arms. And even if they are going to bring up young arms, you talk about wanting to protect him in the minor leagues. You want to know how you protect Brady Singer? Never let him go 6. And by that, I mean never let him see the third time through the order. Let him mow through twice, get through 5 1/3 innings, and then bring someone in behind him. Don't put him in a weird situation where he puts a starter in front of him. Do that to one of the veteran arms who you know you don't want to see a third time through the order, say Jacob Junis. But they need to finally do that. Like, if Mike Matheny is going to stick true to his word and be this, I'm above, you know, like, I'm an analytics guy now, or I'm open to these things analytically, the one area where you can definitively see that for the Royals is the pitching staff. They have multiple guys who could be openers. You might not have realized this, but Josh Stama was being used as an opener in AAA last season. Multiple guys were being used as an opener last season in AAA. Why were they doing it in AAA if they didn't actually mean it as a possible employment strategy at the major league level? Great. The easiest way to protect a pitching staff or a weak starter who shouldn't be going a third time through the order is to make sure he doesn't see the third time through the order. A starter can do that. Multiple relievers like Scott Barlow can go multiple innings like they did with Andrew Miller for all those years in Cleveland. That's a real option. I think the Royals need to be more inventive this year.
One of the things that I took away, go all the way back months ago when Mike Matheny did have his opening press conference and all that, and you're right, and he talked about how much he's changed from his time in St. Louis, a variety of reasons why he's changed. But yes, the big focus, and it was like a true believer in analytics. Like that was a major theme of the
yes.
press conference that he had, and I think a lot of Royals fans were like, okay, this sounds great. And when it comes at a press conference, everything you say sounds great. Now people want to see it. I guess this would be one way, as you said, maybe to go ahead and improve that right off the bat by having an opener. I don't think if he doesn't do it that I all of a sudden am going to look at it and say, okay, well.
Oh, he's not an analytics
no.
guy?
And
no,
I know you're
just
not saying that
either.
I know you're not saying that if he doesn't do it, he's not true to his word. Anyway, that's not what you're saying. I get it. So I think, yes, that would be a positive sign that right away he's going to get right to it. I don't think necessarily, we haven't heard a whole lot about this. We're going to have Josh Vernier, our Royals insider, join us at 12:30 as well out in surprise. We'll ask him about this, and does he see that as a potential for the Royals going with an opener? I mean, the Mets, you mentioned the 6-starter plan. That's interesting. They're considering it. I don't think it's a done deal yet that the Mets are actually going to implement that and utilize it. They're considering doing that. Could other teams all of a sudden utilize something like that? I don't think it hurts, especially this year.
This is the time to do it. You said this year. This year. Why, Gold? Why is it good this year?
Well, it's because this year I don't consider them a team that's truly going to compete.
Correct.
And they don't have, at this point in time, any inclination that it seems like you're going to have multiple young pitchers from your minor league system starting on the opening day roster. So you're kind of buying some time a little bit.
Mike Matheny has already, there's what, 2 weeks into spring training? He's already openly admitted to having starter problems. He didn't put it that way.
Yeah, that one. Yeah.
But that's what he said.
Essentially, that's what he's getting at.
He said we're thin at starter. If you're thin at starter, and you're not going to start Brady Singer, Kowar, Lynch, Bubich, whoever, right? I don't care what the name is. If you're not going to bring up the young starter yet because you want to give him time, and you don't currently have a veteran starter, not that that solves your problem either, what is the other option? Get creative. Put 6 starters on your staff. Put Scott Blewett on your staff. And couple him with a left-handed starter like Eric Skoglund. Do I want Eric Skoglund starting games for this team this year? Nah, not really. Do I want Scott Blewett starting a lot of games for this team this year? No, not really. Am I open to the idea that they share the starter role and they just move them lefty-righty depending on how much worse or better that lineup does? They never see the third time through the order automatically, and that when they're not being used as a starter, they go to the bullpen for long relief. Am I open to that as an attempt? Yes. Yes. Because that's actually doing something different. That's looking at your starters in a way you haven't looked at them ever. And baseball's really gone that way. It's gone, and I know the Mets, you know, like theirs is a heavy analytically based guessing system in which they think that they can handle that. They don't trust Steven Matz to stay healthy, and it gives you some other options. And you might very well, you need 7 or 8 starters, 8 to 9 starters in a season anyway. This plan might get foiled immediately, and you don't even have a choice beyond it. But they should honestly look at it, because trying something different in that regard is a good strategy when you don't have the depth at starting pitcher at the major league level that you've said you don't.
Yeah, the timing is right if you're going to try. But at the same time, I do wonder, given the fact that you are, you can make a case on both sides. You can say, well, it's a new regime. It's your first year managing the Royals. Do you want to roll the dice on something like that? A week
into, you're not at risk.
A couple weeks. Exactly. So that the positive end is you're not at risk. You roll it out there for the first month or so of the season, potentially something like that, or later on in the season, and fails after 3 runs of it, essentially. You're okay. And it's done. That's not something you're going to go to. Or would you rather wait down the line and where people are going to be a little more critical as the season goes on than the first
July
month of the year?
And then try it?
Yeah.
I understand, but like you can't be afraid in sports in general to actually take a risk. It's a huge mistake that a lot of people make. It's the Jeff Fisher model of being a coach, being a manager. Let's just do everything as the hosting a radio show. Like, this is a life lesson. Take a chance. Like, I'm not saying, like, do things outlandish. What I'm suggesting to you is not an outlandish idea. It might have been 80 years ago in baseball, but it sure as hell isn't now. Like, if you've got to show some willingness to, especially because you've got 26-man rosters now, you have more ability than ever to manipulate a roster in the way you want to see. Let's say it's a 13-man, right? Like, at least the Royals last year, I didn't like them holding a roster spot for Terrence Gore necessarily. I was like, you only get 12 of these guys, and you're going to have one guy in that you just pinch run. And then they wouldn't pinch run it. Like, no, every chance in the 7th, 8th, or 9th in a one-run game, and you have a chance for a run, Terrence Gore runs. That's his job. That's what he's on the roster for. Let's do it. If they wanted to do Nick Heat that way, great. But it was like half-assing one thing versus whole-assing. You're like, just do it. You got to own this decision and try. And that's the problem. You're right. 2 weeks into the season, you get yourself in a situation you're like, oh, it's not good. Great. 2-3 weeks, get yourself
on it pretty quick.
And I understand you're saying 2-3 weeks and you're 10 games below 500. Okay, great. You didn't do that last year. Where were you after 14 games? 2-12? What's risked? Nothing. Nothing. Other than the players getting frustrated that you're trying something they don't trust. But players are more willing to accept these things now than they used to be, too.
We'll get back into some baseball in the noon hour. I mentioned Josh Fernier going to join us a little bit. We'll get his perspective on this as well. Thinking of change, though, change maybe in the NFL. Some coaches wanting a little bit of change when it comes to the replay review system. We've seen a little bit of this in both the XFL in the past. We've seen in the AAF, the league that folded very quickly last year. Coaches apparently want this sky judge, this idea that there's someone up in the press box, essentially, that area, looking down. The league office, though, skeptical about this. So the Washington Post initially had this report that coaches are planning to push the idea this week, in fact, in Indianapolis at the scouting combine. But the league office and the majority of officials are skeptical that a sky judge is viable. This, to me, is something that right away, you want to talk actually about taking pressure off the officials. So the officials are against it. I think it actually takes pressure off the officials. You have a sky judge. To me, it takes pressure off the officials because, yes, people are going to be correcting calls of the officials on the field, but there's less pressure on the officials because if we're getting calls right, if calls are being corrected and right, to me, that's less pressure on the officials. Holding them more responsible necessarily doesn't put pressure on them to be under more criticism directly. If people are getting the calls right, I don't think people are going to be calling out officials. I think we just want the calls to be right, do we not? Like, I'm not going to be upset if a call is wrong on the field, we have this sky judge, and they correct it 30 seconds later. I have no problem with that, Cody.
No.
Get the call right.
It depends on how much time you're talking. Like, if it's 45 seconds later, if it's a minute and a half later, to hell with it. I don't care anymore. I used to be on your side. I used to be pro replay, pro getting the call right every time, all the time. Nope. That was before
I saw. So you'd rather have big calls blown.
That was before I saw the actual execution of it. If you're telling me the sky judge sits up there and he fixes it within 20 seconds, I'm in. Let's do it. That has not been the way that refereeing has been working. It has been one of those things, replay has been one of those things that has been better in theory than it has been in execution. And I'm sick of it. We're saying, hey, we want the referees to execute better. That's where we're going to put it. But then they suck at executing replay. Like, I'm trading one sucky execution for a different sucky execution. And I just, like...
So you don't have any faith that the sky judge, if we enact the sky judge, that they would still get the call wrong, is
what you're
saying.
They'll get it right 50% of the time, and it'll take twice as long as the original bad call. And then I'll be mad that 50% of the time, they're taking too long to get the right call, so that they're fixing 50% of the time, and I'm still wrong 50% of the time, no matter what. The problem just, it's like extending it into a deeper issue. Is my math making any sense here? Like, it doesn't solve the problem unless it happens quickly.
I mean, we had an example during the AFC Championship game this year. Now, that was the Tony Romo stuff. Remember, Romo actually mentioned during the broadcast that the officials had missed what, at the time, should have been 12 players on the field. And then
that's an easy fix.
And all of a sudden, it is. And so why not get that corrected? So guess what happened? The officials huddled up. They called a penalty. And the speculation is that they got alerted by the league office. In its own right, that's kind of a sky judge. Now, that came from the league office, so it took longer, to your point. It took longer in that instance because that came more so from New York directly. This would be someone actually on site, on a monitor up above as well. That would also be that sky judge on every single play. Hey, you got mistake happened. You missed the 12 men on the field. How do you blow that call on the field? Shouldn't be something that they make mistakes on, but people make mistakes. Why not correct it? It'll happen even quicker than it did in the AFC Championship game.
You know,
12 men on the field is something
it?
They can fix in 10 seconds, Cody.
Yeah, but that's one example.
Sure.
If you put the sky judge, that's an easy fix. There are a lot of other not easy fixes.
So because to me, fixing one call is better than not doing anything at all and just letting it be status quo and having more calls that are missed. I'm all about getting it right. I don't want it to take 2 minutes.
What percentage do they fix? What percentage do they actually fix? A quarter? 30%? Because the other times it just be like, I don't know. Judgment call.
Yeah, but this wouldn't be a true replay review. This would be on the fly a sky judge. This isn't going to be, oh, now we're telling you upstairs, you need to go take another look at it. This would be somebody upstairs after every play, during every play, looking at it, and then
going in a headset. And then how many do they get wrong? Because if you think universally they just get them all right, let's just laugh hysterically at that.
They're not going to get it all right.
I just think there's a flow to a game.
We're going to have more correct calls with a sky judge than we do currently.
And they got referee problems. I'm not arguing there, but I'm just not interested. For now. I'm kind of with the refs for now. It depends on how well they execute it. I'll listen if they've got a flawless plan for how
to go. So what have you thought of when you've seen it in the XFL and these other leagues? Now, I'm not saying the NFL would ever let it be transparent where we're hearing them actually talk about stuff during reviews.
Oh, God, they would not.
That would be great. God. That's never going to happen. I'm not saying that.
There's nuance in this sport. I think you know, overall, do I think refereeing is down? Yeah, I do. But I don't know that just adding another guy to the mix solves the problem.
I think they should just get rid of goal line fades.
I'm fine on that as well.
They added it to the combine, sir.
It's a new drill. One of the 16 drills, practicing fades.
Like, you look like a terrible quarterback. Throw this goal line fade.
There's like 3 guys in the NFL that are good at fades.
And they're not even that good at it. What's their percentage of success ratio as someone who is good at the goal line fade? 12%?
Yeah. It's the worst play in football.
Yeah, if we got a rule for that, I'm in.
Trash of the day.
All right, little trash of the day quickly here. Hot Pockets, I don't know if you're a fan of these, but apparently there's a Hot Pockets heir, the heiress, in trouble. We don't have to get into the reason why she's in trouble, really, but she's involved in the U.S. college admission scandal, that whole deal. But the reason why we bring it up is there's a Hot Pocket heiress. Cody, for some reason, did not believe or understand. Why wouldn't there be a Hot Pocket heiress? Someone that's the heir to the Hot Pocket empire.
I mean, could you imagine just walking around?
I'm not a Hot Pocket fan, by the way.
Hey,
I like
Cody,
Hot Pockets.
How'd you make your money? My dad invented Hot Pockets.
Great.
Did you realize there was that amount of money in being the Hot Pocket heirs? Did you see how much her family is worth?
Well, they sold the company to Nestle a while ago.
Their family is worth $4 billion.
You don't think if you invented
what?
You don't think if you invented Hot Pockets or Gushers
it's just
or
a calzone, so? But you can make in your microwave.
Exactly, that last part's the key. You can take it to your office. You can have it for lunch every day.
They didn't invent the microwave. This person invented a Hot Pocket.
And I don't like them, but apparently people do.
She got 5 months in prison, by the way.
Man, I haven't had a Hot Pocket in a decade.
Do you think they have Hot Pockets at the prison commissary?
They probably have Hot Pockets in the kitchen.
I'm dead serious.
You think right over here in the company kitchen?
I'm going to get a Hot Pocket for lunch. $4 billion? $4 billion? Am I the only one that's stunned by this?
I'm sure she can get some Hot Pockets delivered if she needs them.
Nestle bought the company.
I don't think you get stuff delivered to jail, Serta. I don't think that's how it works.
When you're a billionaire heiress, I bet you do.
Hot Pockets sold to like Nestle for $2.6 billion at one point. So that is where they got their money, too.
Man, I just... Honestly, all I want to do is be able to introduce myself as Hot Pocket Air. That sounds like a pretty sweet gig. Like, I mean, is this... I guess this is...
What about the guy
who did Bagel Bites? Are they worth like $2 billion? Those were...
I bet you it's... Who was that? Is that Nestle as well?
You think there's a Bagel Bites heiress?
Hot Pockets is an actual brand. Bagel Bites is probably made by, like, what? Totino's or one of those.
Oh, God, there is. Her name is Kristen Capps.
Yeah, they invented something.
My God, there's a Bagel Bites heir. That Google search came up way too quick.
Yeah, she's on Twitter. Staff? Well, no, that's a different guy. You sure that's real?
I don't know.
That seems like it might be fake.
Great. I hope it is, because it's depressing if it's not.
Coming up next here on Cody and Gold, it's a Chiefs Red Half Hour. What has to happen for the Chiefs to have a successful 2020 draft?
Cody and Gold, brought to you by Crossroads Investment Lending, the fix and flip guys at caseylend.com.
Back here on Cody and Gold. Did you tweet it out? Did you put the photo out yet?
I did.
Okay. Ryan Witkowski, very focused. Very focused in on his Wonderlic test that all three of us are taking a little bit later on the day. Again, next week we'll have the results of our 6-10 combine at 11:10 each and every day. But it's time for a little Chiefs Red Half Hour right around this time each and every day. We talk nothing but Chiefs in the draft. I know it seems far away, but it'll be here before we know. It really will. And currently the Chiefs, we know, have one first-round pick at pick number 32. And so what would make a successful draft? We went through a little bit and said, all right, this offseason as a whole, best-case scenario, you know, sign Chris Jones, and maybe you think they should sign Sammy Watkins or just go out and draft a wide receiver, right? That's the offseason as a whole.
Sure.
But how do you make a successful draft? And you look at the history, first off, of Kansas City, and just go back 1 year. We can look further back in a second. But last year, Juan Thornhill, Mecole Hardman, Rashad Fenton, right? That was your three guys that had an impact on a Super Bowl team the very next season, the very season that they were drafted. And Thornhill, of course, unfortunately had the injury, but good news that we learned yesterday, Thornhill, they're expecting him to be ready to go by the start of this upcoming 2020 season. So to have a successful draft, given the fact that you're in this window right now, if you're Kansas City where you've got Patrick Mahomes, maybe you have Chris Jones still on the roster, but either way, on the Chris Jones route, this is a team that's going to be and currently is the favorite to win the Super Bowl yet again, and challengers in the AFC, maybe you can make a case for the Ravens, and that's about it. So you're looking at guys, yeah, you would love for guys, you're okay later in the draft to develop further down the road, but you need some guys that can also help you right away to a certain extent, and they've had a track record of being able to find that. So for the draft to be successful, I don't think you need to get multiple starters right away out of this thing. Eventually, you would love to nail on a couple guys like last year, Thornhill and Hardman, they became essentially starters before the season was over. But I think if you just get one, whether it's it doesn't matter if it's your first round pick, second round pick, whoever it may be, especially if it's the route that I think they should go, which is corner. Like to me, a successful draft, if you in fact take a corner in the fourth, your first round pick or your second round pick, and that guy becomes your starting corner, not just because you need a starter, but because he's obviously playing like in camp that you think he can be the starter, that's a successful draft. Corner will be an area of need. If you can draft that, that's a successful draft for me. If you get that accomplished and find a starter at corner.
I think you need to have two major contributors. It depends on how you value what considers a major contributor. I think you need two players who are a regular part of a serious rotation of players. And so last year, and I went through every year of the draft, you mentioned Thornhill was an immediate contributor last year. He was a starter.
Yep.
Hardman, immediate contributor. Wasn't a starter, but a contributor, a major contributor, right? Rashad Fenton, as the season went on, kind of became that, but it took a big chunk of the season. But also, you traded your first round pick for Frank Clark. So with your draft capital, you did the maximum amount you could possibly be expected to do. The year before that, the only guy you got to contribute in year one was Derek Nnadi. The year before that, the only two you got to contribute in year one, the only guy you got to contribute in year one was Hunt. But you took a guy named Patrick Mahomes in that draft, so everything
worked
out fine.
Just fine. Yep.
The year before that, Chris Jones and Parker Anger, and I know you're saying, who? Were immediate contributors on that team to go with Tyreek Hill. So there were three in that year. And eventually, Anger, they traded for Charvarius Ward straight up. So they got tons out of that draft. With Peters and Morris as instant contributors in 15. That doesn't mean in other years they didn't have guys that didn't eventually contribute. Steven Nelson became a multiple-year starter for them across the league in this. They've got other offensive linemen who became starters for them across the league. But if they're going to continue title hopes again next season, they got to find two guys, I think, in the vein of just go back to even the year where it was Jones, Anger, and Tyreek Hill. Hill had a little over 500 yards. Chris Jones was a rotational player, but damn near an everyday starter. And Parker Anger was a halftime starter at the offensive line position. This year, for me, you got to find two. And I think you got to find two in four positions. Cornerback, wide receiver, offensive lineman, or running back. I toss in linebacker, but I think that they might be able to find a cheap veteran to get it done. But in those positions, you got to find two guys who can fill those needs and then hope that you can cover the rest with starters you have on there.
Yeah, I think any draft where you can come out of it with two legitimate contributors as rookies, then that's a successful draft class. Because I understand that the Chiefs don't have a ton of picks this season, but the draft is a crapshoot. And I went back 15 years in draft classes, and the Chiefs have some pretty god-awful draft classes. But with the Dorsey, Brett Veach era, Andy Reid era, for the most part, they've been pretty consistent aside from Veach's first draft, which at this point looks pretty bad, unless Breeland Speaks winds up being healthy next season and becoming a serious contributor. That looks like a pretty bad draft. But yes, last season was successful. Colin Saunders last year, who I think is going to be a contributor moving forward. He's a guy that you could be happy about. I don't believe that Darwin Thompson's ever going to get a significant enough role for us to look at that like he is a successful draft pick in the way that we were hyping him up to be anyways. But if you get two guys, they don't have to be day one starters, but they have to be guys who contribute in a significant way as a rookie. I'm not talking like a wide receiver that has 15 catches for 150 yards isn't a contributor.
So Chris Conley in his rookie year was 17 catches for 199 yards and two touchdowns.
Yeah, like Tyreek Hill, his rookie season, didn't do a ton of damage in the receiving game, but we saw how dynamic he was. We saw that when they worked him into the offense, he could be devastating, and as a return specialist, he was incredible. And same with Hardman last year. You just have to find ways. Like if you get a rookie wide receiver who gets six touchdowns, I'd be pretty happy with that.
I mean, for me, successful versus great. Successful is if you are able to, in this year's draft, right away, get one starter. Just one.
You need to get starters out of every draft, but you need one guy to start immediately.
Right. And that's successful. To me, what makes a great draft is an example of even last year, potentially, where that's headed, where Thornhill was a starter right away. He's going to be a starter for what appears to be a long time in Kansas City with the way he had a rookie season, even after the injury. Hardman, I've told you, I think he's ready to be a number two. If not, he's going to be at some point, I believe.
He's not a starter. He's a major source in the offense.
And then you mentioned technically with Frank Clark, given the fact that you traded the pick to get Frank Clark. Like last year, that wasn't just successful. I view that as maybe great, potentially, where this thing is headed. And so I don't think you need to get multiple guys right away. If the Chiefs are able to replicate what they did last year,
they can't afford five guys who don't play right away. They can't find five guys, Breeland Speaks.
But
or
I
five.
Think successful versus great. If they have two guys in this year's draft, and they have five picks right now, I believe they're going to end up with more than that. They have five picks, let's just say right now, and two of those guys, one starts, let's say, and if in your case, maybe if two
and
guys
the other's
are starting,
a running back or wide receiver who's in the rotation, great.
That's perfectly fine. That works. That's successful. What makes it great is all of a sudden if two of the guys are starting right away, and that doesn't seem very likely, but that's what makes it great. So that's why I think looking at what they potentially can do, I don't think it's crazy to think that they can't have one. Just give me one guy that can start, and again, I prefer to be at the corner spot because that's where I think they need to target more than anything else.
Well, that's the easiest place it is going to be to start.
It should be. I mean, you don't need a wide receiver to come in and start right away. You want a contributor. You don't need a wide receiver, even if they lose Sammy Watkins. No. You don't, because I believe that whether
but,
it's... Go ahead.
No. I was going to say, you're right. But to your point, it's like there's a difference between like Chris Conley, right? Who was taken in the third round, expected to be a contributor, got 199 yards. Tyreek Hill and Mecole Hardman both had in the 500-yard range and were both key contributors on the special teams. Like, there's a big difference between, like, we took a wide receiver and he's Jehu Chesson in the fourth, and we took a wide receiver and he's a contributor. Like, but you find those things out very quick.
So I think Kansas City ends up with more than five players in the draft, too. So that helps you out a little bit. I think, because I still am a believer that, unfortunately, I know Chiefs fans don't like to hear it, but I think they're going to end up tagging and then trading Chris Jones. I do not think he will be back on a long-term deal with Kansas City. It's not that I don't want it to happen. I just think that's where it ends up. And if that's the case, all of a sudden, maybe you have the chances of you getting and having this great draft or successful draft go up in a huge, huge way, because all of a sudden, maybe you have two first-round picks, or maybe you're trading back and you've got a couple second-round picks and that 32nd pick overall, if you're able to acquire the pick for Chris Jones. So I think your chances of having that, you're going to have more opportunities to throw out the dartboard, if you will.
How many spots do they actually have available for starters? A wide receiver, we'd say no, because if they draft one, we still assume a Mecole Hardman will get that spot, or a veteran wide receiver mm-hmm. will get that spot. So they don't have a starter spot, an official starter spot. They've got a key contributor spot at the wide receiver, but no one there.
And that would be fine.
Maybe one on the offensive line? But right now, everybody's pretty much under contract.
And there
maybe
is a report
one
out,
running back, but you got to think they're going to give it to Damien Williams first.
And there was a report out from Matt Verderam, who we've had on the show, of course, recently, and he mentioned that the Chiefs want to bring back Wisniewski. They're interested, at least, in talking to his reps and bringing him back as a starter, potentially, at least bringing him back on the offensive line. So, yeah, you're trying to figure out where there's a spot on the O-line. Now, if you fall in love with a guy in the draft at the O-line spot, you'll
fine.
You mentioned you're right. There's not a
but again,
there's not room. But if you fall in love with somebody, then there's somebody that's can beat out somebody as
second
well.
Second tight end, that's not a
no.
starter.
No,
there is no spot on offense to start immediately. So the contributors are on defense. There might be a starting spot on the defensive line. There might be multiple
you
spots.
Mean
the in
contributors
the
are on offense. The starters would have to come on the defense.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, 100%.
Because there aren't that many available spots. On defense, how many available spots are there to start? Maybe one or two on the defensive line, depending on how the Chris Jones thing
corner,
out.
Most likely.
Maybe
linebacker,
one or two
linebacker.
At the cornerback spot. Maybe one at the linebacker spot. Right? And then let's say Thornhill's not ready right away. Maybe you're in a 50-50 split time situation there. Like, there are multiple spots on defense you can be expected to immediately be on the field. Now, some of that is how much you believe in is Tano Passanio sticking around. Is Breland Speaks going to do anything? The guys in the defensive line that they've actually spent on draft picks in the previous seasons, and guys like Tano would become contributors. I don't know if I'd say major contributors, but contributors. Valuable members of a Super Bowl winning team. I just don't think there are that many available spots. Sorry, I guess, how many spots do you think are actually available for a starter in this year's draft class? Two? Cornerback and defensive line?
I mean, I think that they need an upgrade at linebacker. I think that if you found a linebacker that you deemed to be more talented than anyone that you have on your roster, they could become a starter over any of those guys. Except for maybe Hitchens, because you're paying him a significant amount of money, but the other positions are completely up for grabs. Cornerback and, yeah, I guess defensive line. Maybe offensive line if you found somebody who is just hands down better than what you have, and there's some question marks like at your guard positions, so I guess there as well. But I mean, if you come out of this draft with a legitimate starting cornerback, that I would be more thrilled about that than anything else.
And you would take lesser contributions from other players if you got that.
Yes.
You would take a guard who was a four-game starter in an injury situation and a linebacker who played 25% of the snaps. If that was your next two best,
yes.
If you got a starting corner, which means hitting on the first-round pick or your first pick in the draft might matter more than any of them.
Yes, that's where I'm at. And that's why we've talked about priorities for the draft and positionally, where do you want the Chiefs to target right away? And assuming that there's not somebody that falls that you're in love with, absolutely. And I said, yeah, give me the corner spot, because that's someone that can help you right away that you really need help at right away, no matter what you decide between Breland and Fuller as well this offseason. As we continue our Chiefs Red Half Hour here, and Chris Jones and Patrick Mahomes, what's going to happen with them and their future? We know Mahomes is going to be here, but what happens with his contract situation? The wait really is where we're at. It's a waiting game for Mahomes more than Chris Jones. I mean, let's start with Patrick Mahomes a little bit here, because Dak Prescott doesn't have his new deal. They haven't communicated, sounds like, a whole lot with Stephen Jones and Jerry Jones, as his camp hasn't, and just absolutely ridiculous that the Cowboys haven't done a better job of that. Deshaun Watson, it's time for him to get paid as well. We know Mahomes is the best quarterback in the league. He's going to be, should be, the highest paid quarterback before the start of the 2020 season. But this thing could drag out a little while. And it's okay. It's okay if you're Patrick Mahomes. I think to a certain extent, it's okay for the Chiefs, but it's a little bit more concerning for the Chiefs. You would prefer to get something down a little bit sooner. But I don't think if you're Mahomes, if you're Lee Steinberg and his camp and all that, there's no reason for you to even really get into serious conversations about it until you know where Dak is at, until you know where Deshaun Watson is, at least one of them, specifically Dak. To me, Dak is the more interesting one right away. Just where is that going to be set at? What is Dak going to get from the Cowboys this offseason? We expect him to still get that from the Cowboys and not be a true free agent, for example. So I think this thing stretches into July for Mahomes at minimum.
Yeah, I'm thinking it's going to be mid-year at this rate. For Chris Jones, you have to make a decision before then. You have to either decide you're trading him and you have to do it before the NFL draft, because you're going to franchise him immediately. And then you have to make a decision on if you're going to trade him so that somebody else can work out the long-term deal. And if you're not going to trade him, then you buy yourself into July to make the decision about whether or not you're going to just keep him on a one-year deal, or if you're going to extend him, and you'll have until around July to solve that problem then. But you only buy yourself time. And to be clear, my order of operations for what I would do with Chris Jones is, one, sign into a long-term extension, keep him in Kansas City for a long time. Two, franchise tag him and keep him around a year. Three, trade him for draft picks. And I know that that's not typically the style most people would go, because they'd say, nah, to hell with it. If he's only going to be 1 year, give me the picks. Every year Chris Jones is here, the defense is better. Look at the double team numbers, man. For Frank Clark and Chris Jones, Chris Jones was one of the most double teamed players in all of the NFL last year. You're trying to tell me that doesn't help Frank Clark? That there's not going to be a small step back in Frank Clark's performance, even from the back half of the season, if Chris Jones isn't on the field? Nah, I want to keep that part of the strength of the defense intact. And I just think that you're right. We might be waiting a little while before we hear from either of these guys, just based on how long this is taking.
And here's what Brett Veach, in fact, had to say about Chris Jones and where he's at, and is he a priority or not?
Yeah, listen, it's certainly a priority for us, and I had mentioned that. I mean, sometimes these things take some time to work through. As you mentioned, the franchise tag is something that we have the ability to use. We certainly like to see if we can work something out with him, and I think the tandem of Chris Jones and Frank Clark is something that any team would want, and we're going to work hard to see if we can get that done.
To your point there at the very end, obviously. And I just think this is going to be something where, like last year with Frank Clark, what was it, a day or two before, a week before the draft, less than that, that the Chiefs went ahead and traded with Seattle, gave up their first-round pick for Frank Clark. I still think that is the scenario most likely that this goes, where he gets traded. And if you are going to trade him, by the way, to wait into July, to me, if it gets past the draft, that tells me the Chiefs actually do think they get a long-term deal done. Right, because if you don't think it's going to happen,
I think if they wait till July, I feel like they're working. They actually are very serious about a long term deal.
Correct, because otherwise you're silly. Get the draft pick for this year's team. We talked about the window now. Get the draft pick for this year's team. Get the starter that we're all looking for in this year's draft to make an impact, or contributors to make an impact right away in 2020.
Or just decide you've got your best chance in 2020 to win a second trophy with Chris Jones in there, even if it's for a year, and then you again try to sign him on the open market, depending on, because you got a better idea of where your financials are after the deal. The other part of this, and another decision they can make, because we mentioned the draft, we mentioned Chris Jones and where they can go on these things, is what they're going to do at the running back spot. One thing I keep seeing come up is the possibility of the Chiefs going after Kareem Hunt. Yesterday, the Cleveland Browns announced they will tender him. They can tender him at either a first, second, or third round, and I do not care what round it is. I know there are people who think this. Maybe it's just a vocal minority on it. It doesn't make any sense for me. I'm not interested in bringing back Kareem Hunt for a couple of reasons. One, I can't be sure that he's gotten the personal stuff worked out to this point. I don't care about the PR disaster, because that's a Chiefs problem, not a me problem. I want to cover a good football team. Kareem Hunt would make you a better football team, but not at that cost, and not where you can often get that kind of value out of the draft from a running back who can't prove he can be on the field for whatever circumstance right now.
mean, I saw what he did for the Browns offensively when he came back last year, and he played a role in the passing game. He helped that offense out, and I'm not doubting that one bit. You say the PR thing's not a big deal. That's a huge part of this. It has to. You can't.
Doesn't matter to me personally.
It doesn't matter to you personally. But if we're talking about, do you want it to happen from just on the field? I don't even want to, as a fan, even want to deal with, even just from a fan perspective, even deal with that being all brought up once again, because
it's
pretty good going
about getting other PR things put to bed. Super Bowls take a lot of heat off organizations, even for making decisions.
But why?
Like
why
this?
Even go back to that? Why even go back to pre-Super Bowl issue that may or may not have occurred?
Because they've got multiple on the team. Why
even
do
that?
I know you're saying you're bringing back up.
Yeah. Why even go back?
Because
to
you
that?
Want to win a second Super Bowl.
Is Kareem Hunt the difference of you winning a second Super Bowl or not? I don't think so. That's where I'm at on it.
I think the best version of the Chiefs' offense was the offense with Kareem Hunt, but it doesn't make any sense to bring him back when you can go draft a running back, because, I mean, even if you wind up bringing him back, you're going to have to give him more money than you're going to get, than you're going to give a draft pick in all likelihood, unless you make that draft pick a first-round pick.
Yeah, and even if you give a first-round pick, you're not likely to pay him way more than you are now and have more control. Like, you just can't get into the game of, like, we're going to keep a running back around for a couple of years and then either have to pay him or just walk on him anyway and give up the draft capital. That's where you run into an issue. I'm with Serta. The best version of the Chiefs offense in the last two seasons was when Kareem Hunt was in there for those eight games. And I still don't want to do it because they still have a pretty great version of their offense now, and I think that they can recreate that in the draft with a running
back. It's just not needed. It's not needed, and I do call it a headache. It's not needed to have that headache, because the minute it happens, whether or not you're right, over time, things heal. You're right. Initially, for the first week or two, it would get brought up, but I don't think you even want to deal with that, the national, backlash next necessarily, but that would come with bringing him back into the organization. There's no need to be able to do that.
Last minute. I guess what I would call despicable people use the Kobe Bryant memorial as an opportunity to try to make some money on eBay. The site had listings for shirts that were being sold at the memorial, pins, programs, basically anything you could get your hands on if you attended the Kobe Bryant memorial earlier this week. But thankfully, eBay apparently has a policy prohibiting people from profiting off of human tragedy or suffering, and manually shut down each of these individual posts trying to profit off of the Kobe Bryant memorial.
Good. I mean, I mentioned it yesterday that people were listing this stuff on eBay. Now you got it updated on it there that they're removing it. So
you do remember people were scalping tickets to Muhammad Ali's funeral, right?
Sure.
That he made those free and publicly available, and then when people got them, they were scalping tickets.
Yeah, his family did, yep.
Scalping tickets to someone. No, that was a big public memorial. And they were still scalping.
I'm just being picky. Yeah, he obviously didn't make it. I know what you're saying.
No, his family, yes. But it's still. I think it was set forward in his will or something.
But you're right. It was people, unfortunately, that everybody's trying to profit off of anything, and the programs and anything else, the shirts that were handed out there. But good for eBay to be able to do that and pull some of those items.
I just don't understand, like, if that's something that you really wanted to go to, and that was an incredible moment. If you listen to Vanessa Bryant speak, or, you know, we played the Michael Jordan cut when he makes fun of himself for the crying meme. There was so much, like, humor and love and honesty and tears that was spread throughout that thing. Why wouldn't you just want to keep those things for yourself? I don't own any memorabilia.
People are so damn greedy, that's why.
It's like they just went just to get Kobe Bryant memorial stuff just so they could sell it?
Yeah, I mean,
God.
These are people who went with a group of 15 people just to get, like, one of everything. And then sell them.
And they're still going to sell it to, like, some sports memorabilia show in a couple of years. Of course someone's going to buy it. Just because they got shut down on eBay, they're going to do it. Just don't buy it. Like, I know you might want that for yourself.
Somebody will buy it. You know,
don't buy it. Don't help these people out.
Unfortunately, it won't be the last time something like this is happening, whether it's with Kobe specifically or anybody else, any other celebrity that has an event like that. Coming up next here on Cody and Gold, we get to what's trending in the NFL. Getting rid of a rule. Do we like it or not?
Cody and Gold, brought to you by Crossroads Investment Lending. The fix and flip guys at caseylend.com.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.